You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 5:06. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Though it's called the most important meal of the day by a lot of people, breakfast doesn't always get the respect it may deserve.
Well, how many of us actually take the time to cook a decent breakfast each morning instead of grabbing that breakfast bar and rushing out the door? Well, our next guest says this isn't the first time in human history that people have overlooked the importance and cultural significance of breakfast.
Heather Arndt Anderson joins us. Her new book is Breakfast, A History. Heather, welcome to the show.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Well, we take breakfast for granted as one of the meals of the day. Not everybody has through history. Are there times when people just haven't eaten breakfast at all?
Well, yes. There have been times when not only did people not eat breakfast, but they were instructed to not do so because of religious beliefs or because of advice from physicians.
Wait, religious was, it was sinful to eat breakfast for at some points in time?
Yes. Thomas Aquinas laid out several different forms of gluttony that one could commit, and one of them pertained to eating too quickly after one's previous meal. And so breakfast was sort of considered to be a meal eaten too soon after dinner. And so it was considered a form of gluttony to eat breakfast for a few hundred years in Europe.
Wow. And they didn't even know about the Grand Slam breakfast at Denny's.
They sure would have seen
that. That would not have gone over well. Well, when did the idea of, you know, a modern breakfast, this bacon and eggs thing that we have going, you know, in America, although maybe it's being usurped by Greek yogurt now, but where did that come from?
Well, bacon and eggs has been around for hundreds of years. Smoked meats and eggs have been eaten since the Paleolithic era. But bacon and eggs together have been eaten since, I want to say like the 17th century. The first people to recommend it were physicians, and poached eggs were recommended to eat with bacon for a proper and wholesome breakfast.
Well, it's interesting how the pendulum swings, because then you write about the invention of cereal. Can you talk about the health movement and the attitude toward breakfast that led to the first cornflake?
Yeah, and actually that is tangentially related to religion as well. Some of the early proponents of clean living movement and the Grahamites, so Sylvester Graham was, I believe, is a Quaker. Those guys were all really interested in whole grains and unprocessed foods. As a matter of keeping one's soul as wholesome as one's body.
Interesting.
And so, yeah, so Graham invented the first kind of cereals with his, you know, Graham flour, and Dr. James Caleb Jackson was right after him with his invention of granola. But the cornflakes were invented by sort of the next generation of that movement, the early Seventh-day Adventists, who were opening sanitaria all over the Midwest, especially in Michigan. They're opening up these health spas where wealthy people could go and sort of clean out their bowels and get a little hydropathy, a little spa treatment, and they would be served various whole grain foods and always vegetarian. And then flaked cereal was invented at the one that was owned by the Kellogg brothers. They were cooking up some grains and trying to figure out some new ways to serve these foods, and they got called away from the kitchen, and when they came back, they realized that their pot of simmering wheat was completely overcooked. It was this really gnarly, dried-out mush on the stove, and they had, you know, to keep an eye on their bottom line, and so they decided to try to salvage it, and they rolled it between these steel rollers into these thin sheets to try to dry it out, and when it broke up into flakes, they realized that it tasted pretty good, and their clientele liked it, and so they started experimenting with other grains as well, and that's when they came across cornflakes.
And yet, you know, hasn't porridge been around for a long time? We hear mentions of gruel, I think, in the Middle Ages. You know, it's anything sort of gloppy and mushy in a bowl. That goes back to the Middle Ages, doesn't it?
It goes back to the Paleolithic era as well, and I always will apologize to my friends who adhere to the trendy paleo diet, but porridge and bread, as you know, as well as smoked meats and eggs, and also tea, have been eaten since the late Paleolithic era. Humans have been grinding and processing grains for just millennia, and so yeah, eating porridge goes back to thousands and thousands of years before the Middle Ages.
Well, what's a breakfast eater to do? We've had recommendations everywhere from, you know, the bacon and eggs and mutton and heavy meat breakfast to humble grain and fruit to no breakfast at all. Is there actually any science that says what we should eat for breakfast that you came across?
Well, there's lots of science, and that's the problem. You're damned if you do and damned if you don't. I think that people should just eat when they're hungry and eat what their body is craving. I mean, obviously, people will crave really salty and sweet and fatty foods that aren't that great for them. But eating something is typically better than eating nothing, which is what the science says now. And the guidance has been that way for a few hundred years. It was really only during the Middle Ages when eating breakfast was frowned upon, but it was generally agreed that people who had to do work, like labor or children or the elderly, still needed to eat some food. And so there were plenty of people that were still eating breakfast, even though the guidance said to stop doing it.
Can you tell us a little about the evolution of, you know, the pancake? Because things like that, waffles and crepes, it's really just a sneaky way to get us, you know, let us eat cake for breakfast, isn't it? And yet it's, you know, it's accepted as a decent breakfast. You can throw some buckwheat in there, some blueberries, and it's passable. Where did that come from?
Well, pancakes didn't start out as a breakfast food. I think that they probably, in fact, in a lot of places in the world, they still are considered to be desserts, and same with waffles. Adding fruit, like berries, to pancakes is a purely American invention and didn't come until Maine in the 19th century, which it's really interesting to me that it came so late because those are such obvious choices to have together. I don't know why it took so long. But yeah, I mean, even the ancient Greeks were eating some honey on their pancakes. They would just fry these thin batters in olive oil and then serve it with honey, and that was just a nice treat. But they weren't really eating it for breakfast.
You know, here, maybe it's just an American thing. In the United States, we have this concept of this is a breakfast food, and eating it later in the day for dinner is a bit naughty. You know, pancakes for supper, what? Do other cultures have such firm distinctions between breakfast and not breakfast foods?
I don't think so. I think that, and, you know, I might be mistaken. I have only lived in America, but I think that Americans fret about this stuff much more than other people. I know in Europe they will eat some foods like, you know, in Italy, they'll just have a little bit of bread and jam with coffee, and they wouldn't have that for dinner, and certainly they wouldn't have, you know, like pasta or risotto for breakfast. In Asia, you see a lot more foods that we consider to be savory or dinner foods eaten for breakfast, a lot of noodle soups, miso soup in Japan with grilled fish. I think it's just a uniquely American thing. I have not been able to suss out the reasons why. I think that these kinds of cultural differences are always up for philosophy and debate.
And just in that same vein, when I was traveling in New Zealand, we went to a cafe and we all ordered our eggs a different way, scrambled and over easy and yolk hard. And the guy just looked at us and said, "You're American, aren't you?" He said, "Nobody but American asks for their eggs in all these different ways. Here, there's just you order eggs, you get eggs." So that was an eye opener.
Yeah, Americans really do like choice. Here in other parts of the world, they only sell one type of dental floss.
How do they survive?
I know.
That sounds pretty nice,
yeah,
actually.
No,
you
really
don't have
does.
To wade through all the... Yeah. So is there something about, you know, our Americans, are we used to too many breakfast choices?
I think that if we are, it's pretty recent. Well, it's not that recent. Our country is very recent. But, you know, since the Industrial Revolution, when we had the birth of the middle class, I think we started getting more of this money that people had to use in more frivolous ways. And so disposable income means there's always going to be people finding a way to get that money from people. And so coming up with new ways to spend money on either a new breakfast room for your house or, you know, new dishes that are just for breakfast, the cereal bowl and the cereal spoon that are only to be used at those meals. I think that there was all this new money and people wanted to find a way to show it off and flash it around a little bit.
We're talking to Heather Arndt Anderson about the history of breakfast, and we want to hear from you. Do you make breakfast a priority in your life? And what is your breakfast? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can send an email to talk@WPR.org or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll check the headlines, and then we'll be back with Heather right after this. You're listening to Central Time on Wisconsin Public Radio.
I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're talking now with Heather Arndt Anderson about the history of breakfast.
And we want to hear from you. What question do you have about the supposedly most important meal of the day? And what do you eat for breakfast? Is there something you eat each and every day? Is it something we usually wouldn't think of as a breakfast food? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or head over to the Facebook page. That's Central Time on WPR.
And Heather, we want to ask you about something a lot of people say they can't live without. It's usually associated with breakfast, but not always. But usually that's the way the day starts. Coffee. Tell us something about how coffee got so prominent first thing in the morning.
Oh, coffee, I agree, is very important in the morning, especially in the Pacific Northwest.
Oh, yeah.
Well, coffee was invented, it wasn't really invented, it was discovered by an Ethiopian goat herder, according to popular stories. And he has seen his goats eating these little red berries and then prancing around the countryside. He gave them a try and found that he was filled with poetry and energy. And so he shared it with the people. And, you know, for a long time, this carried on. And then trade brought coffee to the Middle East. And this was a really wonderful thing. By the 17th century, it did end up coming to Europe. And it came right at the same time as tea and chocolate. And so all at once, Europe got three different ways to become caffeinated. And I think the ban on breakfast went away very quickly after that. People started really enjoying this. And it was just a coincidence because the caffeinated beverages were enjoyed as an afternoon treat. But again, in the rise of the working class and the middle class, people really did need that little jump in the morning because there was more of a standardized work day and standardized meal times. And after it became more affordable to get tea and coffee, people did start really enjoying the benefits of it in the morning.
We'll go to our callers now. We have Brian on the line in Trempealeau. Brian, hi.
Hi.
What's your breakfast story?
My breakfast story, I work 12-hour days. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. We start at 3 a.m. So we have our first breakfast at 6 o'clock, which normally I'll have coffee and a cinnamon roll or something like that. But then for second breakfast at 9 o'clock, typically I would eat like a lunch, a hamburger or maybe some lasagna or other kind of pasta, spaghetti. And then at lunchtime, then we would have another lunch. But that's my funny story for breakfast.
And you actually call it second breakfast?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's a Hobbit's dream come true. I think that's the only other place I've run across that. Have you run across multiple breakfast options?
Me?
Heather, yes. Sorry. Have you run across multiple breakfast options?
Yeah. In fact, in Europe, the Italians will actually often just have a little bit, or the French will have a little cafe au lait in the morning, and that's it. And then a few hours later, they'll go have a little bit of breakfast. And I think that American fast food restaurants find that that is a pretty common trend, too. People get a little something on the way to work, and then they want to have their 10 o'clock coffee break, where they also have something else to eat at the same time.
All right. Well, thanks to Brian for that. And we'll go next to Bruce in Burlington. Hi, Bruce.
Hi.
Hey, what do you think about breakfast?
For 47 years, I neglected myself and just ate whatever I wanted. But in an effort to take care of myself, breakfast has become a big part of that. And so I start my day with three eggs, which I typically poach in the microwave, and a bowl of oatmeal.
Three eggs and oatmeal. So you're really covering all your breakfast bases there. Do you feel better having eaten all that?
Oh, my goodness. The first day I started eating better intentionally, I felt so much better, and I didn't realize I had felt lousy prior to that. So it's made a difference.
So interesting.
I've also managed to lose 4 pant sizes since November, so I'm doing something right.
Interesting.
I think you've got a book deal in the works. The Egg and Oatmeal Weight Loss Plan.
Well, it sounds like it's been working for you, Bruce. Is that common, Heather, that people who do eat breakfast and they pay attention to it, do they feel better? Because we do hear, you know, breakfast is the most important meal of the day. Is it true?
Well, there's a lot of evidence that people who eat breakfast weigh less than people who skip breakfast. And I think that when the body is in starvation mode all night, when you're sleeping, you're essentially fasting, and so breaking the fast in the morning is a way to kickstart your metabolism, and that's just according to what a lot of common dietitian advice is happening today. I certainly feel better when I eat some breakfast, so I can speak anecdotally there.
Mm. Well, you've mentioned some things that go back to the Paleolithic era in the breakfast world. Here's one that probably didn't. Our producer, Chris Molina, said he started his day with Lucky Charms cereal bars. And that brings up the idea, we've got all these convenient breakfast foods. Where did those come from? And are they really taking over our breakfast these days?
Well, they definitely are more available than they ever have been. And I think that a lot of people like to implicate the post-war rise of the working mother for the rise in convenience foods. But convenience foods really started coming out after World War I. And I think it's because personal cooks or family cooks in households, they just weren't available anymore. And anyone who watches Downton Abbey knows that after the war, they, you know, were scrambling for household staff. So I think that mothers and housewives who had never had to cook before really came to rely on these products. And then, of course, after World War II, when more mothers and women were entering the workforce, they really did need the convenience foods because they didn't have the time to be spending all day cooking.
Now, we've talked about convenience foods, and what about another cultural staple that has to do with breakfast, the rise of brunch? It seems like it's reached sort of epic proportions of brunching, at least in cities, among certain social circles. What happened with brunch being sort of the high art form of breakfast?
Brunch is an interesting thing, and it's a pretty recent construct. There's actually another book in the series that is dedicated to brunch, but the first use of the word brunch didn't occur in print until the late 19th century, so it's 1895. And in that context, it was considered to be a nice way to spend one's Sunday morning. Instead of getting up early for church, you could just lounge around eating brunch and, you know, have this really, it would be a nice way to start one's week, wouldn't it? And I think that it was kind of a throwback to the old golden age of breakfast when you had, you know, 6 or 7 course breakfasts on a daily basis. You know, after the Industrial Revolution, like I mentioned before, people had more of a standardized workday and just didn't have the time to spend eating, you know, kidney stew with waffles and oats and 5 different kinds of eggs and bacon. And so it was kind of a way to harken back to those, you know, the glory days of breakfast. And then you also didn't have to get up so early. So it was kind of the best of both worlds, I think.
Time for one more call. We have Lisa on the line in Milwaukee. Hello, Lisa.
Hello. How are you?
I'm good. What's on your mind for breakfast?
Well, for both myself and my son. Now, he's 20 years old, but he's always been a fussy eater. Would not touch breakfast foods at all. But I was of the mind that I don't care what you eat as long as you eat. So most of the time, I'd be making hot dogs at 7 in the morning. And that's what he would eat, and that's what he would eat for breakfast.
Well, I think a lot of the world agrees with you on that one. They're not always eating the sausages. They're eating whatever is handy. What do you think about that, Heather?
Well, technically, a hot dog is a type of sausage, so you're a good mother. yeah, I think that throughout the world, people eat foods that Americans would never consider to be breakfast foods. And, you know, I've had Thai noodle soup for breakfast, and it's just a really wonderful thing. I don't think that it always has to be about wheat and eggs and sage-infused meats. I think that getting something is better than getting nothing.
Well, Heather, we've had a loose end dangling through the entire interview so far. What do you eat for breakfast?
What do I eat? Well, I am a fan of scrambled egg and a tortilla with some cheese and salsa. Good old breakfast burrito.
Right. Like on the weekends, or is that like your everyday breakfast?
That's my everyday. On weekends, I go crazy. In fact, you guys in the Midwest might appreciate that I make my own version of a hot dish. I make a tater tot breakfast casserole for breakfast on the weekends.
That sounds pretty good.
Yeah, it's just tater tots with you pour in some beaten egg and maybe some cheese and peppers, something else if you like meat, and then bake it, and it's like a frittata. It's classy.
Excellent. It sounds like something that you'd find right at home here in Wisconsin. Well, Heather, sounds tasty, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
That was Heather Arn Anderson, a food writer based in Portland, Oregon. Her book is called Breakfast, A History.
So, Veronica, we made her tell us what's your breakfast.
Mine is so boring today.
Me
I had
too.
Peanut butter toast.
Oh, okay. I do that sometimes. I am a cereal guy. I eat for years, like my whole life. Sometimes I'm like, I want to eat something other than cereal. I always come back to the cereal.
I can never let it go.
Really?
And it's Michael Feldman's fault.
There's a story there.
There is. I heard there were bug parts allowable in cereal, which I'm sure is true of most food, but that is why I don't eat cereal.
Wow. Added protein and calcium.
I know.